Thanks for tuning into Americana Music Profiles. The next episode starts right now.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Teddy Barneycastle began singing music, gospel in fact, in a church by the time he was 5 years old. When Teddy turned 20, he and his mother attended an Osborne Brothers show, and he was hooked. After years of being a rock and roller, it was all bluegrass. After several stints in other bands, he helped form the band he is now part of, called the Goodfellas, featuring multiple charting songs over the last several months. Teddy joins us on this edition of Americana Music Profiles to talk about his band and their new music. Hi, Teddy. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks, Greg. Appreciate it. Glad to be on board with you today.
Yeah, man. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to chat with us and let us learn a little bit more about what you're up to with your music. I think you said that you are in North Carolina.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Based out of North Carolina. Yes, sir.
Is that home? Been home?
It's home. Yeah, but when I say I talk about my family and I. We lived in Texas for a few years.
Okay.
And done a lot of music in Texas while we were there, and came back to North Carolina. And it's kind of odd where I'm located in North Carolina. I'm in Stokes County. But we border the edge of Virginia, Patrick County.
Oh, yeah, and sure.
So all the Floyd County, Patrick County, buckets of music. And
oh, yeah.
In this area, the three counties that border each other in Virginia and North Carolina, the six counties collectively have produced a ton of musicians.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. But, wow, that's cool. Yeah, you're right. It's interesting. I didn't put two and two together, or in this case, three and three, and realize that those six counties, but you're right. Thinking about where they are geographically, there's a ton of people that have come along long before us that have produced a lot of music out of that part of the country.
Absolutely. And the beauty of the growth of the music in the Floyd County, Patrick County. The beauty of that is Floyd Fest, obviously, Front Porch Fest this weekend, which we will be playing Sunday. So
yeah,
that's
cool.
A plug.
Yeah.
But the beauty of it is who could have planned those festivals being in our back door
and
being as big as they become.
Sure.
So
I
think it's something much bigger than I am that designed that. I mean, just because it's just when you sit back and look at it and think about it, it's like that's kind of odd.
Yeah,
it would.
Yeah, I imagine somebody has done a study or written a book somewhere about that, because obviously Bristol's not that far away, and you know that's considered the birthplace. So maybe it's a funnel through those counties to get to the beginning of all of this in one way or another.
Yes, I'd say if you just follow the Appalachian Trail and just kind of follow left to right.
Yeah, it kind of
tells the story.
Yeah. So you, did you grow up playing music? Did you grow up in a musical family?
I did grow up in a musical family. My, as far back as my great-grandfather, my grandfather played, his cousins, which were, or still is, my grandfather's passed on now, but he was distant cousins with the Easter Brothers. He was an Easter. So, yes, music has always been a huge part. My first real taste of it, I guess, that I can remember, my mom and my oldest sister and one of my aunts had a gospel trio, and we traveled to churches all around the area And more than one time, as the 5-year-old with the old tape recorder with the red button you had to put, I'm starting to tell my age now.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one.
More than one time, I fell asleep on the front pew of a church with that recording. My mom and sister and aunt. Hmm. But I wish I knew where they were at. I would love to be able to go back and hear them. But,
yeah, yeah.
Yes, music has always been a big part of my life.
And I think reading through some the press notes, like a lot of young boys in the high school ages, you kind of took a side trail into some rock and roll music.
Oh, yeah. When that was what really got me, into music to begin with. I mean, I knew bluegrass, but I didn't know a whole lot about bluegrass. Mm-hmm. And I came up, my mom, playing Carter Family records and some Osborne Brother records. And there were some guys around locally that were pretty well known, done several tours with Lester Flatt, called mm-hmm. the Boyd Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
They would come over to the house when I was a kid, and they would play. But my introduction into music was truly rock music. And, you know, I figured out that I could sing by the time I could stay on pitch at 5 and 6 years old
because
I was singing those notes. And then by the time I got to 14 or 15, I had really gotten into listening to the variations of voices and rock music. And a good friend of mine, I'll never forget it, I walked into his room, and his he lived with his grandparents, and they were real hardcore bluegrassers, and he put this album on, and it was a band called Quicksilver. And when I heard the harmony parts, a light bulb went off.
Yeah.
But I didn't recognize it right away.
Yeah.
So I knew the harmonies were the essential part of the music. I'm starting to pick up on all these things now and piecing the puzzle together mm-hmm. in my head. And played in rock bands. And the first rock band I ever played in, which was 35 years ago, we actually got the three that's left. We actually got together last year and played for the first time in 30 some years.
Oh,
it was
wow.
a blast.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah, it was. It was. And you know, part of that was challenging myself a little bit. I was wanting to see where I was at vocally.
Uh-huh.
In reference to what the music was when I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
And I think I did okay.
Yeah.
For the most part. I mean, I think I did all right.
That's cool. Yeah, it's definitely a different style of music. I think that's probably why the bluegrass singers last a lot longer than the rock and roll singers. It's not near as straining on the voice.
The regiments of it, no. And you get to, you know, bluegrassers, they'll throw an instrumental in, or you'll have another lead vocalist that has the capability of giving the front man a break where they can rest. And otherwise, vocalists in bluegrass, especially the high tenor guys, they probably blow it out, within an hour and a half if they had to do all the time.
Right.
But even still, my favorite vocalist by far in bluegrass music is still, they're so powerful and it's just, it blows my mind how strong their voices are as they've gotten older.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorites is obviously John Cowan. And Newgrass Revival gave me the right and told me that it was okay to infuse all my creation, all my musical influences. It was okay to to do it with bluegrass instruments. And they gave me cool. the rite of passage.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. What got you into bluegrass initially? How did you switch from rock and roll music into the bluegrass genre?
You just gave me cold chills when you asked that, because I still get cold chills when I think about it. I was still doing heavy metal music and trying to be a good kid. And when I wasn't out on, gigging, not out on the town, we'll just leave it in that regard. Uh-huh. And my mom and my pop have been big bluegrass fans. As long as I can remember. And they used to do a lot of festivals and a lot of shows. And mom called and asked me if I wanted to go see a band called the Osborne Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't register with me. And I asked mom, I was like, are you talking about like Sonny and Marie? She goes, no, son, it's the Osborne Brothers, Rocky Top. And right. then it clicked. And I was like, oh. And me being interested in music in general, I was like, yeah, I'll go. And we walked into a schoolhouse not far from where I live. And here a kid is, he's got earrings in his ears and he's long hair and he looks completely out of place.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't realize that I had found my place. When I seen those guys come out, and right out of the gate, I knew who Terry Smith was, who was playing the bass. Because at the time, he and his brother had a song on CMT called, I think the song title was Blue Stay Away From Me.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But I recognized him, and I thought, well, what's this country dude doing with this bluegrass band? And then when I heard started wrapping my brain around what was taking place right before my eyes with so little, equipment. And the sound filled the room, and it was just like I had this epiphany, I had found my calling.
Wow.
And, man, when the intermission came, I jumped up out of my seat, and I took off out into the hallways because I'd watched where Terry Smith and Terry Elvers went. Terry Elvers was playing.
Yeah.
And both of those guys stood in the hallway with me for, their whole break. I'll never forget it. Terry Smith was standing up and Terry Eldridge was sitting down on the concrete floor. And I just stood there. I know I look like some kind of idiot. I'm bound to, because, it was like somebody who had just gotten a new toy.
Uh-huh.
And they wanted to open it up, but they didn't know how to make it work. Wow. They needed some help.
Yeah, that's cool.
And ironically enough, Terry Elders and I have become extremely good friends. He's my brother.
Wow. That's really cool.
That is the coolest thing about bluegrass music. Is all my heroes, nearly all my heroes, I'm either somewhat acquainted with them or I'm friends with them enough that I can pick the phone up and call those guys. And that is the best part of this music,
right?
Is that camaraderie.
Yeah. Well, and that and the musicians are accessible to the fans. And that was the thing that really impressed me about it when I discovered bluegrass music 20 years ago, was how accessible, the guys that were on stage killing it with the hits would get off stage and spend an hour and a half just shaking hands and signing autographs with their fans like they were neighbors. So yeah, that's very, very important, integral piece, I think, to keeping this music alive.
Absolutely. And I hope that part of this music, I know from my standpoint, I would try my best never to let that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, what we do, it's about those people.
Yeah,
it's about taking your art, and it's about giving it away. You're giving it in a sense, you're giving it away. You're
sharing it for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Sharing. Absolutely. That's a better word, sharing it. And we got to, you know, remember that whatever we do in this life, regardless of what job title we have or what product we're selling or what ditch line we may be in, or I don't know, pick any business, but it all relates back to human relationships.
Sure, absolutely.
And that is what this music, more than anything else that I see, bluegrass music, is there is a connection not only with the music itself, but also the relationship between the fans and the artist.
Mm-hmm.
And it always intrigues me to see my heroes talk about how their heroes influenced them and see that childlike sparkle.
Mm-hmm.
I know that sounds tongue-in-cheek, but see that childlike sparkle in their eyes.
Yeah.
And you see it in them that they feel the same thing that you're feeling about who they are.
Yeah, yeah.
But the beauty of all of it is most of all of these musicians have so much humility about them. Mm-hmm. That it's you almost wonder, it's like, are they being for real? Are they being for
right, right. Yeah. No, I'm with you. Sports and other genres of music, it's really hard to get close to the people you idolize, you know, from a distance. It's really hard to reach out and touch them, but you don't have any problem doing that in the bluegrass world.
No, the
artists welcome it, which is very encouraging, and I think that's probably what helps keep the music alive.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you were inspired, clearly, by that moment, and then stepped out into the bluegrass world and had a couple different bands until you got to the iteration that you're in now, which is the Goodfellas. When did that start?
Goodfellas? Actually, when I came back home, my family and I came back home from Texas, Ralph McGee, he and I had started playing together in 94. And Ralph was, you know, he had a lot of ideas like I did, and we didn't live that far apart. And so, you know, I needed him, he needed me, and
mm-hmm.
it got worked out. And he come to find out that both of us shared a common thread with, you know, kind of this, you know, our appetite for music. And what's really odd about it is we didn't realize that we were going up the road one day to, we were going out towards Tennessee to do a show. And Ralph's brother Rex had tagged along with us to do the show, and he was looking up because Ralph and Rex's mom was an Easter, and my mother was an Easter.
Oh wow, cool!
And they all came from the same region, and it come to find out that we were like fourth cousins.
Oh wow, that's cool!
And we'd been together for a number of years, and we never put it all together. So anyway, to answer that question, how Goodfellas came to be was we had started doing corporate shows, and I'll name drop just to kind of give you a general idea.
Uh-huh.
Like, we did a show for IBM at the Masters in Georgia.
Okay.
I mean, high level, high level corporate private functions. I mean, and they paid really well, but there's an issue with that. You know, most corporate shows, you're not much more than a prop. You're just background noise. And for a musician, some musicians would be content with that. But for a musician that wants to really share what he or she's doing, money will never satisfy that.
Right.
Money.
Right.
There's something ticking in that individual that makes them want to get the music out because they feel like they've got something to share. Well, at the end of 2018, I had gotten to the point that I was, you know, I didn't want to do the corporate stuff anymore. My time clock was ticking, and I was ready, and I was going to go do something on my own or whatever. And we booked our first festival, and we were riding up the road, and somebody asked how we were going to, what our band name was, and we didn't have a band. And I just threw it out there. I mean, it was a dumb idea. But I just said, let's just call ourselves the Goodfellas, because we're always taking lines from the movie Goodfellas and saying them to each other going down the road to pass the time. I mean, right. It's just, if you travel with musicians, you better find a way to laugh, joke, carry on. But
so, you guys have a new album out fairly recently or on the way?
We have an album out that we released right after COVID hit full blast, and we didn't see each other for about 5 or 6 months when in 2020. We played 2 shows, and we had recorded 1 song. We had been in the studio. We had tracks laid. And when COVID hit, we had some really great stuff lined up for 2020. I had some personal stuff lined up for 2020 that was huge. Mm-hmm. And everything come to a halt. We didn't see each other for 5 or 6 months. When the smoke kind of started clearing, I talked with Wes Easter at Eastwood Studios, and he was good with going back in. And so we hadn't been writing, and we wanted to get something out. And Ralph and I talked about doing an album of our favorite songs, regardless of what genre of music, and just doing an album cover change.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's what we done. And, you know, it got something out there, but it was a good move for us at the time.
Yeah.
2 songs off of it went to number one. The rendition of the Bee Gees' To Love Somebody stayed on Bluegrass Today chart, top 6. It was several months. It went back to number one. It was number one 4 times on Bluegrass Today's chart. And then we've done a rendition of Hal Ketchum's song, I Know Where Love Lives. I invited Pat Flynn and John Cowan to do a cameo on it, and they graciously said yes. And that was a bucket list thing, as well as, you know, this would be a cool idea kind of
thing. Sure, yeah.
And that experience alone was, I could never put a price tag on that. Because it was very, 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 very special. It was just amazing to see those guys work. But yes, this album is out, and the rendition of the U2 song, Where the Streets Have No Name, debuted at number 2. We were 2 spins away from it being number 1.
That's cool.
It is cool. And, you know, I knew that going into this, you know, it was all covers, and I didn't have any reservations about it, because if you're going to do a cover, you don't want to take away from the cover. You want to put your own,
sure,
your own spin on it and complement the cover. And I think we did that very well with, To Love Somebody. I'm just glad that we had already had it recorded before I heard Keith Urban do his version of To Love Somebody live.
Right.
It got so ingrained in my brain that I thought, man, I'm glad I didn't hear it. Otherwise, I would have never done what I done.
Yeah.
On that song. And then it wouldn't have been mine. It would have been me doing a version of Keith Urban doing a version of Bee Gees.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Wow, that's cool. So, where can folks hear the new album, reach out to you guys, find your schedule, all that kind of good stuff?
We have a website, goodfellersband.com. You can find the music, you can find music there. Anywhere that is streaming music, you can find the Goodfellers.
Good.
You just have to make sure you punch in the ERS and not the AS, because oftentimes folks are like, I can't find it. I said, well, that's because it's ERS. We're Southern.
Yeah,
we
right.
Don't say fellas, we say fellers.
As in F-E-L-L-E-R-S, Goodfellers.
Yes. Yeah. Right, Goodfellers.
Yeah.
You know, it was just kind of tongue-in-cheek kind
sure.
of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I assume that they can track your name, Teddy Barncastle. Yeah,
absolutely. Yep, you Google my name, and right now there's a single out that I've done with our young guitar player. He and I put a single out called Teddy Barncastle and Kaiser George. Kaiser is 17 and just an unbelievable guitar player. Unbelievable. He's an unbelievable musician at 17. I mean, he's just crazy good. And we done a version of the Austin Brothers, Listening to the Rain.
Okay. And, yeah, great song. I listened to it yesterday.
Oh, okay. Our version or the...
Your version, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It was a really fun project, and it initially was not intended to be released, but when Kaiser laid his tracks down, he was not quite 15 yet.
Wow, that's cool.
Or I'm sorry, not quite 16 yet. And you know, he looks at me and says, "Hey man, we're not going to release it." I said, "Well, and not on the Goodfellas album." I said, "But if you want to release it, we'll just do it as a duet."
Yeah,
because I mean, I'm not going to say no to Kaiser.
Yeah.
I mean, my responsibility is to do everything in my power, what little power I have, to promote this kid to be who he wants to be.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So that's what I do unapologetically.
That's cool. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, Teddy, and enjoyed hearing these stories. I always enjoy hearing the stories of how these things came to be. So I appreciate it, and certainly wish you guys well with the new record. Continued
Greg,
success.
Thanks so much. And we appreciate it's an honor for us to even be recognized by anybody that wants to hear anything about this band. I mean, we're just so humbled to be, and I mean that with all sincerity. We're very
yeah,
humbled
cool.
to get anything, any kind of notoriety in music. So thank you.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.